Wait.
No.
No, Charlie, I said wait. You can move.
Oh.
Frozen like a fucking scare, like a little cat caught in headlights.
Breathe, Charlie.
It's good to be back. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of Red Jacks On. I am your host. I'm going to call myself Serendipus Sirhan today because I'm back. It's a nice happenstance. It's been a couple of weeks off, and I've been looking forward to this. So, boys,
you've been thinking about that name for like weeks.
That's why it's taken so long. That's why I actually went away. I was like, I don't have a fucking.
That was the whole reason for the podcast today. So I found a good
Sirhan, Sirhan, Serendipitous. And I learned a whole new word.
Very good.
But yes, I'm your host today, Sirhan, and with me, as always, is
Big Boy Charlie,
Bald Man Rick,
and Fantastic Fraser.
Fantastic Fraser.
There's no consistency here. We need some consistency.
Well, nah. Me and Charlie have the consistency. Fraser has a nickname, but I don't think he really wanted that nickname. It was just given to him.
Who needs consistency?
He did pick it.
So, you guys know that I was off for a couple of weeks, but I went for about 2 weeks or so to Cyprus. Okay. We've mentioned it before that I am Turkish Cypriot, London born and raised.
So really?
It's a true story.
It's insane.
You thought every time you came around my house, you're like, Cyprus is really nice. I was like, yeah.
It's got a really good tan constantly.
Just constantly sitting in mine. Yeah. Yes, London born and raised, North London Turk. But as I was in Cyprus, I've spent so much of a lot of my childhood there. I thought, you know what? This potty is predominantly for us, right? It's a lot of memories and we're always going to have a laugh. And there's a lot of inside jokes that have come from a lot of these background stories. So I thought, right, today, and Rikesh already saw this because I sent him the name. Today's episode is called Turks, Tremendous Turkish Time Tales.
Oh, okay. I like that.
Yeah. So we start off with a little bit. We're dipping our foot. This is not a report on history of Cyprus. This is not all about me. This is a little dip in each area. So we'll start off with just a little bit of history. Okay.
Cool.
So things that I didn't even know. Like any history of any country, that any report that we ever do, this is obviously like your very standardized Wikipedia facts. Okay. Every culture will have a different version.
Turkopedia.
This is the Turkopedia. This is just purely Turkopedia. So yes, this is one perspective, but this is just very objective as it is. So we start off, boys, with the mysteries of history.
Oh!
Right, so we start off in the 1050 to 332 BC. So this is about 8th century BC to 6th century BC. Obviously, BC moving backwards.
Okay.
Okay, so the lower the number, the closer it is to our timeline.
Yeah.
A long time ago, there is, and I don't even know all of these cultures and empires, if you will. So there was the, it started off with the Assyrians, Cyprus. This is one of the earliest recordings. Then it became Egyptian. Then it was Persian rule. Just to set a little bit of perspective, geographically speaking, Cyprus is right under Turkey, right above Africa, closest to Egypt.
Okay.
The right, it will be more so the Middle East. The left, you'll get the coast of like Italy and Greece and sort of the European Mediterranean side of things. So it's very much in between the East and West. It's like a little little pinpoint, if you will, a little island. So moving on from the Persian rule, we have the Hellenistic period. The Hellenistics are, if I'm not mistaken, when I studied for Patra, there is Hellenic Greeks, very old school, more closer with ancient Greeks than modern day Greeks. They more so resided in Egypt. That's why they are much more like darker than European looking. They're more like Arabic looking, Egyptian looking, Mediterranean in their features. And yes, and that was around the time that Alexander the Great conquered Cyprus, integrating into his empire. Within 10 years after Alexander's death, Cyprus became part of the Ptolemaic Kingdom of Egypt. So again, rejoined into Egypt.
Mm.
Jumping now, this is a bit more closer to home. This is the history that I'm a bit more familiar with. So we move on to 58 BC to 395 AD. Now, this is Cyprus becomes more, it's taken over by the Romans.
Mm-hmm.
And with the Romans, so Cyprus became part of the East Roman Empire, which is known as the Byzantine or Byzantine Empire after the division of the Roman Empire. So the Byzantines are a Greek-speaking Orthodox sort of culture, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
They are very steeped in Greek culture, and I believe there is some connection of ancient Greeks in their blood. It really is the East and West Roman Empire. So Rome was the Western Empire, and Constantine, if I'm not mistaken, was the brother of the West Roman Empire. So it became the Eastern Roman Empire, which was the Byzantines.
All right.
And the Byzantines took Cyprus at that time.
So in terms of, because Cyprus changes hands quite a lot, would you, I don't know if it's in your notes, but like, do you think that's more of like a territorial thing, or did Cyprus have anything in particular that's quite valuable?
It's a good question, because I did kind of look into that as well. Predominantly what you will get online, from my understanding, is it's all about strategy. Geographically speaking, it's the road between East and West.
Yeah.
So if you control that island, you have there's a lot of people that, even these cultures, and we'll touch on that, have gone in and out of the country, will have left behind, let's say, like a lot of army bases, military bases, if you will, because it's such a strategic place that, God forbid, even if you were going to fire off a rocket, you are literally equally distanced from like the UK in the West and all going all the way to the East. You are right bam in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So even back then, even before that type of warfare, it was all about strategy.
Because
if you're holding a part of what is modern day Turkey or modern day Egypt and Africa, then that island in the middle is the perfect transport point. It's like a bridge.
Makes sense. In the early days of like naval disputes and trade and stuff as well. Yeah.
Especially where warfare was more predominantly either on the sea or on land. There was nothing in the air, if you will. So Cyprus remains under the Byzantine control for several centuries, experiencing periods of Arab raids and short-term occupations. Other cultures came in and out, but it's predominantly Byzantine. Now we move on to a period, I think, that we're a bit more in tune with this in this country, a lot of history that we learn, is the medieval period. So in 1191, Richard the Lionheart of England conquered Cyprus during the Third Crusade. A year later, in 1192, Richard sells Cyprus to the Knights Templar, who quickly sells it to, and I'm going to explain who this guy is, who they quickly sell it to, it's a French name, Guy de Lusignan, L-U-S-I-G-N-A-N. It's a French pronunciation.
Okay.
So this person, Guy de Lusignan, and the Lusignan, forgive my pronunciation, family was a very, very big family of wealth and power. But this particular guy was a French Puvetin knight who resigned as the king of Jerusalem from 1186 to 1192 by right of marriage, and then the king of Cyprus from 1192 to 1194.
Okay.
Big family. I mean, they were literally involved in Jerusalem. So from 1192 to 1489, this Lusignan family owned it. They were the kingdom of Cyprus. And then at the end of their reign, 1489, so this is the last of that family, Queen Caterina Cornaro, the last Lusignan monarch, secede Cyprus to Venice. So Venice came, and again, this is very Wikipedia facts, came knocking on her door and said, listen, you're the queen, you've got this island, you've got no heirs, let's take it off of you, we'll kind of buy it off of you or exchange something for you. Which was like, all right, why not? So now...
get rich off this
casual
Cyprus. Literally, isn't it?
Yeah, all right.
We're actually moving a bit more towards modern day. So the Venetians now, so the people from Venice have now owned the island. They owned it from, or had it as an empire between 1489, as I said, to 1571. Cyprus becomes a Venetian colony, heavily fortified against the Ottoman threat. Ottomans being my ancestors, they were one of the more later established empires. Because they were one of the more later ones in the game, they were the last empire to break in the modern day. So all the other empires may have broken, let's say the 1800s, a bit before, a little bit after. The Ottoman Empire ended in 1920. When we stopped being Ottomans and we became the Republic of Turkey and Turkish, and we took on more of that identity. So yes. So after, from 1571 to 1878, we move on to the Ottoman Empire and British period. So the Ottoman Empire conquered Cyprus in 1571, making the beginning of 3 centuries of Ottoman rule. When by 1878, so the Ottoman Empire by this point, again, these are all very political things that I don't entirely understand. There's a lot of different reasons. There's one instance that they said, right, so the Ottomans rented it or leased it to the Brits. They never technically took over it. It's the on maps, it was still an Ottoman Empire, but they leased it to the British. One element is because by that point, the Ottoman Empire was starting to get weaker. So they kind of fortified their boundaries, if you will, to something smaller that they could obviously guard and keep for themselves. Another reason that I found was, so the Sultan at the time, Abdul Hamid II, seceded the administration of Cyprus to Britain in exchange for guarantees that Britain would use the island as a base to protect the Ottoman Empire against possible Russian aggression. So there was a Russian threat coming in. The Ottomans went to the British. Right, I'll tell you what, as a little exchange of a bit of backup, if you will, we'll give you the island, we'll lease it for you for however long, but you need to back us up when the time comes.
That's a mad negotiation. I didn't know that was even possible.
Yeah, I'm like, how do you just lease an entire empire? Like, hey, you can borrow for a couple of days.
I mean, look, I'm sure these sorts of politics still happen, but to a certain extent, this is very much the old school way of doing things. You know, you go to a land, depending on obviously the perspective, you invade or you conquer, you take, you're mine now. Mm-hmm. And there's every empire does it differently. Some empires say you're going to be like us. Some empires say we'll leave you alone, but you're going to pay us taxes. And it just was the way it was. You know, you planted the flag, that really meant, oh, damn, that's it. I guess you own us now, sort of thing.
You get your place there. You either you hold it or you take more. And it's strategically going to be valuable to you. So
Absolutely. It's sort
you
of
might
like,
get a deal out of it or not.
It's sort of like how the way I kind of saw this exchange is almost like how like two countries, even warring enemy countries, was to say, right, your son will marry my daughter. And it's a unification, and it's a way of kind of creating an alliance. So I feel like Cyprus almost was like that marriage. You know, we'll let you get your foot in the door. On paper, it'll be ours. But when, if shit comes to shove, you know, you're going to back us up as an ally. So
as a side note as well, I always thought like a sultan as a leader was pretty cool. That's probably just Aladdin.
Yeah.
But I always thought sultans were pretty cool.
Salt, I mean, yes, I guess it's just what they called the head. I mean, the only difference, I mean, okay, name is a leader, The only thing I know about the sultans for the most part is the Ottomans were one of those empires where the sultan, their king, was in battle with them. It wasn't like chess. The king was like, would be on the front line. He would be navigating. He would be kind of orchestrating the war, if you will, or at least on the battlefield in a tent. So it was, I'm sure there were sultans that were like, fuck it, let my army do the job. But that's how it predominantly was, at least.
Sick.
So from 1878, the British were actually held onto Cyprus till 1960. So they held onto it just under 100 years. It says in 1914, Cyprus is annexed by Britain at the start of World War One. I looked up the word annex, and now I've forgotten what it means.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, I think someone's really Googled it. I think it was something to do with, like, extending their time there, sort of thing. But again, please just fact check that one. 1925, Cyprus becomes, so by 1925 now, Cyprus has become a British Crown colony. So now it's less of a rent or lease. Now it's like, no, we've got it now. By that point, you know, the Ottoman Empire has just finished by about 5 years. It's become Republic of Turkey. So that the politics, I assume, when we went from Ottoman to Turkey, the Ottomans, with all the lands that they held around that have become other countries, they had a lot of negotiations. Okay, cool. We'll give this part of, like, we'll give Bulgaria back, for example. Or we're going to give parts of Egypt back. All right, cool. You can keep that. And then other countries are negotiating. Nope, we want this part of land. So it was a lot of negotiations to create the modern day shape and borders of Turkey to say, nope, this is what was left of the empire. We'll take this. You guys can take that back. So I think it was in that exchange that Cyprus must have been, all right, Ottomans or the Turks said, right, you can have Cyprus now.
That's very important as well. because, like, say with the colonization of Africa now, where they just cut things up, now there's loads of fighting because the way they cut those borders doesn't make any sense. There was no negotiations.
If you guys were ever to watch, there was a really good BBC documentary a fair few years ago, 3 episodes on the Ottomans, and they actually mentioned this point that Fraser made, was that when it was, forget less Cyprus, when it was more the Ottoman Empire and they were negotiating a lot of these borders, the way a lot of the countries in Europe, I think like France, Germany, the UK, other countries that were trying to think, because of the way they negotiate, obviously at that point they just wanted the chunk of land. They say that a lot of the troubles of the Middle East on the border between Turkey and the Arabs and other nations and whatnot, that a lot of it was sort of a lack of diligence on the way they negotiated that border. That's why there's still a friction. Some people say it was done more on purpose, to gain, to get a foot in, unless they get oil, you know, divide and conquer sort of vibe. Some people just say, you know, these people didn't really understand the gravity of their negotiations whilst trying to set a border up.
How long ago were these negotiations where everything was split?
Towards 1920 is when the Ottomans ended, or 1920 onwards, actually. 1920, Turkey got its first president from the Sultan. Anyway, these negotiations happened around 1920 onwards.
Right.
Cool. Okay, so now we're really hitting today now. So obviously the British Empire had Cyprus till 1960. So in 1960 came independence. Now Cyprus is now going to take away from there. The history of Cyprus is a complex one. North, south, there is obviously Greeks there from day one. Turks came with the last empire to take over Cyprus as well. So there's a lot of mixed feelings, a lot of mixed stories about this stuff. This is not my place or ever a time to really set what it is, because who the hell really knows? What I can say is Cyprus gained independence from Britain and became the Republic of Cyprus in 1960. 1974, we move on to, this is where the more controversial side of things, I call it the Civil War and division. So there was a mix of different things. We were trying to make kind of one government, but Britain had it for so long that Britain was the one that kind of set the border, kind of divided in that sense, because we were a very mixed country. Turks and Greeks lived side by side, if you will. And then when the border happened, and I'm sure this happens for a lot of countries, it was kind of traumatizing for these people because they all had to leave their villages and homes and say, right, you're a Greek person who live in the north, right? You got to move all your stuff to the south. Oh, you're a Turk living in the south. You got to move all the way to the north. So they had to literally kind of exchange and say, all cultures on one side, all cultures on the other side.
Crazy. Oh, mad.
But was there a particular reason for that?
Because of the strategy of the land, so this is kind of what happened. To my understanding, again, these are very Wikipedia sort of facts. There was a coup from the mainland Greece. So apparently Greece sent some of their own soldiers, and they were like, right, we're going to make this a Greek island. Then Turkey itself got involved. So Greece got involved, Turkey got involved. It became a game of strategy. There was a civil war. I mean, there's stories that I get, like, even from my dad remembers as a child coming home from where he, bless him, he started work from, like, I don't know, 13, 14. Mm. So coming back on the bus, hearing people screaming, bombs are going off, like real traumatic stuff. Yes. When the Brits were still holding Cyprus in World War One, for example, my grandparents telling me, because obviously it was so hot, they would sleep outside and they would see, like, the Germans trying to drop bombs on the UK British bases in Cyprus, and how it's missed the village and the explosion. So the island is seen a lot just because of where it physically is placed, unfortunately.
Mm.
That's wow.
Yes. So this kind of happened as a civil war, a division. So with this, all of this stuff happening, Cyprus is effectively divided into the Republic of Cyprus South, which counts as Europe, and the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, but it's only recognized by Turkey.
Okay, right.
That's why the laws and the rules are a little bit different. I can't ever fly direct to North Cyprus from the UK, because it doesn't. I have to land in Turkey, do a transit flight. People from the south can, because it's recognized, and because the south is Europe. Technically speaking, South Cyprus is the last European country or city, sorry, capital to be divided in the whole world, because the capital is divided between both sides.
Oh. Isn't she, like, in the middle? Mm-hmm. Is in the border.
It's the border, yeah. It's not, to my knowledge, like, it's a very easygoing border. It's not like the American Mexican, but it's not so heavily guarded. You pass with your passport, you can go on both sides. There's no problem at all. But I know that there is what there is, I'm sure, with like a lot of borders, the UN buffer zone, where it's like sort of the green zone. There is no conflict in this zone, sort of thing, from either side.
Okay.
So, and this is where my story begins. This is where I really want to get more personal. So, with my grandparents being born under the British rule of Cyprus, they were educated on elements of British history, more so focusing on British historical figures involved in Cyprus, and worked alongside many British and Greek people. With this connection between Cyprus and Britain at the time, when the time came for my grandparents to start a family, build a life, buy a home, and just establish themselves, seeing that Cyprus did not have all the opportunities it could for everyone at that time, as most of life in Cyprus, predominantly, especially back then, was agriculture more than business.
Mm-hmm.
It was a lot more to do with the land. They moved to the UK. The reason my grandparents moved to the UK wasn't just out of coincidence that other people were doing it, because Britain had actually given the people of Cyprus access to live there due to their reign at that time. Hence why so many Cypriots moved to the UK at the time, because it was like, you don't need a visa, you don't need this, you can come, you're part of
the life.
Which I never really understood. I was like, that makes a lot of fucking sense.
Wasn't that similar to Jamaica and Trinidad and Tobago and stuff like that as well?
Windrush.
Yeah, mad. So, I mean, you know, as bad as the British Empire was, it did have, in the end, a little 1% of glimmer.
Yeah, but
bringing you guys over here.
Saying something's good or bad, of course, it's a lot to do with how history kind of tells it. But to me, it's more like that is, we really do have to take into consideration, this was the rules of the time. This is the way you could. Like I said, if someone came and knocked on your door and went, my flag, my house now, you'd be like, oh, fuck, that's not fair. At the time, though.
Oh, shit.
Oh, man, just go.
I hate when that happens. Third time this week.
So this is where we start to move a little bit more, a bit more trivia, a bit more fun. I'm going to get more into some personal stuff. So this is split into two. This is called Random Facts with an Impact, because I like to ram. It's a bit trivia. And as a little side game, this is called Subtitles for the Turkish Title. Now, boys, you've been round to my house. And I hear this a lot from a lot of you guys, that sometimes me and my family will get off on a little Turkish little rant or convo or a little odd sense. And sometimes we'll turn to one of you and be like, oh, by the way, we're talking about this. And there'll be a lot of nodding, a lot of mm-hmms, and a lot of, don't worry, I could read the subtitles. So I've put together a bunch of phrases, some that you would have heard, most of them that you would have heard, some of you wouldn't. And we're going to take some guesses and we're going to get some fucking points going here.
All right.
Point.
What really messes my head up is when you're like, you're speaking in English and then you go Turkish and then you're like mixing in the English and Turkish. I'm just like,
and then connecting the English parts and being like, how? Yeah. How did that conversation go there?
All you hear it is like, da 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 da. Yeah, twice. Da 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 da. Dead. Huh? Who died? Twice?
Twice.
Nice red carpet. Oh, he did a double what? Homicide. I'm sorry, what?
And that's why I don't drink milk. All right, give me 1 second.
One.
Give me 2 seconds.
One, two.
Two.
This is a shit. Okay. So, random fact number one. Cyprus is the third largest island in the Mediterranean Sea after Sicily and Sardinia.
All right.
Sardinia sounds small, yeah.
Just a quick nod from everyone. Okay.
Everyone's like, yep. Okay.
Is that a point? Do I get a point?
No, it's not a point for this. So, first word, boys. First word.
I agree. 1 point.
I do agree. You get a point just for being agreeable, Rick. First word. What does, and I'm going to do this as first one to shout out. If you get it wrong, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
What does tamam mean?
Thank you.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, we just shouted out.
Okay. Charlie, you shouted out. I would have heard you first. Next time, buzz in.
Sorry.
And you got it wrong. So, Rikesh, I'm going to go for you.
Okay.
Okay.
it means okay. All right. Come
no,
on. Charlie's like, Charlie's just not shaking his head like, no, that's how could that be correct? I would know this.
Come on, come on.
Okay. Fact number two. Cyprus is known for its rich cultural heritage with influences from various civilizations, including the Greeks, Romans, Byzantines, Ottomans, and British, which we've already touched on about. Word number two.
that was such a useless fact. You told us that already.
I kind of created this out of order, and I was like, oh, these facts, yep, cool, these will work.
But on the back of that fact, though, like, if you're part Cypriot, because so many different cultures have been through that island, like, you could be a big mix of a lot of different things, right?
Yes. Most predominantly, I would most likely be an element of Ottoman, Turkish, Greek, and Italian, which would probably be my mix. I've never checked into it. The Venetians were, so the Ottomans are my people, which came there. They took it off of the Venetians, so there was a lot of Venetians people, a lot of Italian people still there. The oldest and most longest residing people there were the Hellenic Greeks. That's why Cypriot Greeks are very dark compared to their people from their motherland of Greece, because they're very blonde, blue eyes, much more fair. They're more European things, especially countries that are bordered on the sea will end up mixing more. Hence why North and South Italy, the South by the sea is very dark. They mix with a lot of Arabs and Turks and Greeks. North, all of Europeans, only the countries that surround it.
Yeah.
Very effectual. And especially Cyprus being the middle of both sides of the world and wrapped around with countries, that's why it is very, very mixed.
Oh, that makes sense.
Cool.
So the next is a pair of words because they're a coupling. And that's the only clue I'm going to give you. What does evet and hayır mean?
Wait, do you say them together or they're two separate words?
They're two separate words. Evet, hayır. But they're a couple. They're a pair.
Okay.
Sort of like, I'll give you another small clue. When I say a pairing, sort of like salt and pepper. They're two separate things, but you would pair them off together.
Buzz.
Rikesh, you buzzed in, my friend. Two for a point. What is it?
I know evet is yes.
Okay.
So I'm assuming the other means no.
Buzz, no.
I know the other one. Rikesh, you get the point.
Bang in.
Evet is yes. Hayır is no. He is cheating.
Hacks.
She
hacks.
Is cheating.
All the hacks.
It's actually Turkish.
Listening devices in your house.
Got Duolingo.
As we that's speak. Why. That's why my mic's getting interference, because his mic's in the room as well. Right. Fact number three. So obviously with these cultures being there, there's a lot of mythology linked with the land. Some of these I know, some of these I don't. So according to Greek mythology, Cyprus is the birthplace of Aphrodite, the goddess of love and beauty. The famous Petra to Romeo, Aphrodite's rock near Paphos is said to be the site where she emerged from the sea.
Oh,
straight up sea.
She came from the sea.
I don't know that part, but I've known about Aphrodite's connection to the island. It's been called the Island of Love. Like, it's had these sort of mythological associations and attachments, myths around it.
Fair enough. Cool.
And we're back. Who's going to get the Turkish? Wait, what did I call it? Hold on. Wait. The Turkish title.
Here we go.
Turkish Tam.
It's Turkish Tam. What does Lütfen mean?
Ah, buzz.
Ah.
Rikesh is on it.
Please.
It is, please.
You're just teaching us manners.
Yeah.
I just thought, you know, I was sitting around with my dad and I was going through some memories and stuff. I was like, obviously, some of these are from my childhood. So I'm like, what year was this? What year was that? Just to get a little timeline. And I was like, I want to write some phrases for the boys. I'm like, what would they hear the most though? What's the most repetitive words that you're going to hear? What am I going to do? Give you a whole sentence? I'm not here to, I'm not Duolingo. Like, but yes. So, fact number four. So obviously, because the island is split, two languages, two names for very similar things, sometimes very similar, sometimes not. So
it's Nicosia, which is the capital, or AKA as I knew it and know it, is Lefkosia, is the capital of Cyprus, and is the last divided capital in the whole of Europe. The northern part of the city is the capital of the Turkish Republic, while the southern part is the Republic of Cyprus. I kind of already mentioned that part, fact, yeah. But I just found it so interesting.
Never right. seen it before. Is it like, is it modernized like these days, or is it like, is it quite authentic?
So the way I would describe it is, I will touch on this more. The northern Cyprus is much more with the land, if that makes sense. Like you will see a lot more just natural openness. It's not very European in that regard. You know, the street lamps, it's one part of it may work really well, the other part may not. The sewage system is not as on point, for example. Like there's a lot of pros and cons to it. Obviously, I go as a, well, ex-European, as a Londoner, as a Brit, and I'm like, huh, I get to sit in these moments of relaxation because it's a holiday. Where for them, when you go to South Cyprus, very European. It's like London with the sun. More open, more spacious. Don't get me wrong in the sense of city-wise, but it's definitely very European. Mm. And it's just got the sunshine there, for example. So yeah, you will feel a difference. Even in the capital, by just crossing that small border, you're going very rustic sort of market stalls in the north to very more modernized, sort of more of a cleaner version on the south. On the same bit of land. It's a very different experience.
I guess it's similar to most places, isn't it? Like, there's always like somewhere that they've really built up and put a lot of like energy into, and then like the rest kind of just becomes agricultural.
Yeah, yeah. It's sort of like almost, even if it's like I lived on the edge of central London, you know, one side of the river, you see everything built up. You look on your side, it's just standard, let's say, flats and apartments and shops. So there is that, yeah, that sort of juxtaposition in a sense.
It's, yeah, it's strange because we kind of think of like central London's obviously more built up and you move outwards. And you get more rural. But I guess it's like, it's just like north, south, that kind of gradient.
Yeah. Same sort of rules apply, that sort of rural to suburb, but just in a different direction. Because obviously London feels very roundy, squarish, and then you get out, whereas a border is just pretty much a straight line, and then that's it. It's just
south.
That's cool.
Right, boys, get ready to buzz. Because this one is piss easy. What does Merhaba mean?
Buzz.
Charlie. Charlie, don't think about this. Come on, mate.
Hello.
Hello. It is indeed hello. Hello to you.
Yay.
Rikesh, did you just give him a chance? I saw you shouldn't even flip. Rikesh,
I was like, you know what? Let me just hang back for a quick sec.
Look at this guy coasting on 3 points. Right. So another little fact that I mentioned, but again, these are just to really define it. So the island is divided by a UN-controlled buffer zone, also known as the Green Line, I do apologize, which stretches for 180 kilometers across the island.
From the entire?
The entire island, from the left to the right, yes.
Wow,
okay.
Should jog it. See how fast his head turned.
I'm okay. I'll look at it on the map. I'll draw it with my finger, but I ain't fucking walking that, bro. I think that would be so sus if you just kept. It's like pacing up and down in a room and just staring someone out. Let alone walking up and down the fucking border and be like, Everyone, both sides would be like, shoot this guy, the fucking green line. Look at him. He doesn't look trustworthy. Right. So we move on to another pairing. These are two separate little phrases, very connected, but you would only really hear one once you hear the other. That's why they're a pairing. So I'll give it to you one at a time. The first one is hoş geldin. Hoş geldin. The second one is hoş bulduk. Just do it, Rick.
Oh, buzz.
Charlie, go for it, mate.
It might not be. I mean, I'm going to go for it, though. Is it... It's either day or night. I was going to guess day or night, or boy or girl, but either way, it's 50-50.
Well, I mean, you pick. You pick. Which one do you want to go for?
Either of them right.
No. Neither of them are right.
Then I'm just not going to bother.
You can guess one of them. I'll give anyone a point for even one of them, because this is not the most straightforward. Frazzle, go for it, man.
Good morning and good evening.
No.
Again, close but wrong.
Okay.
It is an element of a greeting,
mm-hmm.
and finish and reciprocating that greeting, but the meaning is different than what you're saying. Rikesh, mm-hmm. you wanna jump in?
I'll give them one more try.
I've heard Rikesh say this. I've heard Rikesh say this.
I don't get it. I'll
but do you know the meaning though, Rikesh? You know when to use it, but do you know the meaning?
I think so. Okay. I think so.
I'll give Charlie and Fraser a couple more guesses.
Say them again.
Hoş geldin. Hoş geldin. Hoş bulduk.
You know what? Fuck it. Buzz.
Rikesh.
How are you? I'm fine. How are you?
It's not unfortunate.
Fuck you, Rikesh.
It's not how are you. I understand why you would say that because of the place that you use it.
Bulldog.
Just hit that little you're like the kids in school, little side remark. Oh, the fucking clever kid's always gonna get it. Is it, sir? No, it's not. You twat. The little fucking teacher's pet. Right, guys, I'll give you I don't know how many more clues.
Buzz, please and thank you. Have we said that?
No, it's not please and thank you.
I'm thinking of parents.
So it's a greeting of some kind, and it's something that you would say to someone upon entering your space, your house, your room.
Oh, okay.
What do you say? What could you say even in English?
Buzz.
Charlie. Welcome. Welcome is Hoş geldin.
Okay, welcome, and get out.
Could you imagine?
The standard greeting in every Turkish household. Welcome. Get the fuck
get out.
Come in. Come in.
So welcome is what one
take
person
take your shoes off.
Say.
Here's some slippers.
No. So not confuse
tea?
It.
Turkish tea?
Welcome is the person, obviously. So you say welcome, I've walked into your house, Chaz. I would say to you, to the host, Hoş bulduk. I say it to you as a reply. So if you said welcome to me, what might someone say?
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having me.
Kind of, yes. So I'll give that point to Charlie. So the thing is, if you look at it like directly on Google Translate, it's very welcome, thank you. It's basically that, but it's more of it's the sentiment behind it, if that makes sense. The sentiment, the words do not mean welcome, and those words do not mean thank you. You would never say it in that sense. So Hoş kind of means like almost, pardon me if I'm gonna get this wrong, sort of in a nice, pleasant, happy, content way. Geldin means you've arrived. So to really put it in a sentence, it's almost like, hey, you've arrived in a pleasant form, pleasant way.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like you're kind of seeing the positivity of them coming to you. Like, oh, I've seen you happy today, or you look good today. It's sort of that sentiment. And Hoş bulduk, bulduk as in I found you. It's the same sentiment back. Oh, I found you in pleasant form. I've seen you looking good. You're looking healthy. It's that sentiment, but it's more as a welcoming greeting and a thank you greeting. You don't necessarily have to mean the words as they are, in a sense.
Right. Oh. Okay.
Okay.
I've been saying that completely wrong at your house for ages. Then I thought it meant hi, how are you? And like, I'm fine. How are you? I thought that's what that meant.
Thanks for having me.
Well, you never know, boys. Maybe we'll get into that a little bit. Maybe I'll Duoling you guys a little bit. So, fact number 6. Now even I want my voice to get freakishly high now. Even I'm like low-key waiting for it. So fact number 6. Cyprus is famous for, and Charlie will definitely know this, for its hellumi or hellim cheese. A semi-hard, unripened, brined cheese made from a mixture of goat's and sheep's milk and sometimes cow's milk. It's also preserved in salt and most sometimes in a little bit of mint. The salt adds a salty flavor, but it was initially made for it just to preserve it.
Stop. Charlie's drooling.
Yeah, Charlie's just... Listen, I am been born and raised in a Turkish household. I don't eat the two typical things. I'm not olive mad and I'm not hellim mad. But Charlie can outdo any person. Charlie's the only person I know that will come around mum and be like, give him some halim. Not even to eat on the day. Give him a whole bar to take home. And Charlie's just so like gold, like, oh, thank you. Yeah,
first of all, it's really expensive. And second of all, I will never forget the day that that guy knocked at your house and handed your mum a jar of just halim. Halloumi, just a halloumi filled jar.
It looks like the biggest drug deal ever, because someone comes around, they will get deliveries from the Cyprus, like a lot of people bring it over driving and boats and whatnot, because it's unfortunate, it's a contraband food. You were not allowed to pack it in our suitcase and bring it over.
Yeah,
politics and bullshit behind it, but we're not allowed to bring it over in that conventional way. So people bring it when they, like, let's say they're going to move furniture over and stuff. So someone will literally come knock on the door, and my dad's just there, like, with cash, like, and he just hands it back to him, like, and he's like, I don't even know if I should be saying this on air, you know. My dad's gonna be like, what have you done? He ain't coming back.
If you need a place to hide it, I'll hide it for you. I'll destroy the evidence.
Charlie's gonna fucking handle that jar like fucking Anne Frank. Like, no one's gonna know shit. Right.
I can imagine him giving him like a little extra jar. So, like, yeah, little extra jar.
Little extra jar for you.
Keep a little extra jar for you. And also, it is obviously, if the fact didn't specify, it's not just famous for that cheese. It's that's the only place it's made. That's where it was originally created from.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Nice.
Mad.
So we move on to the next word, my Turkish learning disciples. What does Nasılsın mean?
Buzz.
Rikesh wants to give it a go.
How are you?
It is indeed, how are you?
Oh, come on. Fucking, I don't even hear it.
I know. I was going to really announce it, and then Rikesh was like, oh, fuck it.
I got it.
This.
All right, guys, I got it. I got you.
Oh, is it Muscleson?
No. Na with an N. Na Silson.
Silson. Nasılsın. Cool.
So, Nasıl by itself means how. Just how. Turkish is one of those languages where if you, and I won't know the terminology of any of this, but if you add something to the end of the word, that's what changes its meaning.
So, okay.
Nasıl is how. Nasılsın with the sin is how are you.
Okay.
And you can kind of change the order of words, sort of thing. So the easiest sentence I would say, in Turkish you can do this more often. So let's say, Charlie kicked the ball. The ball was kicked by Charlie. You're swapping round sort of the...
Right.
The certain parts of the sentence, you can lexicon? Do that a lot. The lexicon, is it called? Yeah, I'm really bad with that terminology.
That's the first time I've ever even heard that word. What the fuck?
Really? What the fuck? I thought my mum might have just thrown it at you.
Jesus fucking bless, Christ. Bless. Rikesh you've made that like, shit up.
Rikesh walks in like pop quiz, man. He just walks in, mum's like, hosh geldin. He's like, chai? Like, no.
Lexicon.
There's the door.
No.
Get out. Right. We're moving towards the end of this now. Fact number 7. Cyprus is home to one of the oldest named wines, Komandaria. I think this is a Greek wine. It dates back to over 5,000 years and was named by the Knights Templar in the 12th century.
Mm-hmm.
Wait. A wine over 5,000 years old?
I don't think it means that there's one bottle over 5,000 years old. I think the recipe for this wine was created then, and it's been repeated there as this particular wine.
But
I'm
maybe sure there is.
There may be some.
Yeah, there probably is.
I would imagine that they found. But it was when the Knights Templar had it in the 12th century.
It's insane.
Wow. Is that also something you can't bring back to the country?
I don't know. I wouldn't know if you can bring back alcohol on a normal day, right?
I don't think you can, no.
Yeah, like, I think that's prohibited. I mean, definitely on flight, unless you buy it from duty free, but suitcase-wise, maybe?
Because
usually when tourists come, they'll get a little something. People can fly with, like, a small alcohol bottle, like the little mini ones, more.
Oh, right. I did bring back some sake from Japan.
Yeah, I don't think...
In your hold.
Personal use.
I think it's different for each... where you're going and where you're flying to. I think they have different rules for what you can and cannot bring. How was the sake though? I've never had sake.
Yeah, same. How was it?
I didn't actually bring any back for myself though, or just gifts, but have you like never had sake at all?
Never.
We should go for some Japanese then. It's just like smooth. Because it's basically a wine as well, but they make them with different fruits and even with potato, and with different fruits and vegetables to make it.
There
you go, guys. It's usually quite smooth, yeah.
Mad.
I thought it was made from, I thought sake was made from rice, rice water.
Yeah, but they infuse it with different fruits.
Right, infusion. Well. Okay. No, mad. Fair enough. I think I have had sake once in Scotland because they got mad Japanese restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, not Japan style. Anyway. Next word. Teşekkür ederim.
Sit your ass down.
Hey, you! Teşekkür ederim.
Are you hungry?
That would be something you would hear very commonly at my house, but no, Charlie.
It's usually the first thing I hear at your house. And whatever I say, there will be food in my face.
Oh, you just eaten! It's a free course meal.
I could literally be biting a cheeseburger and your mum would slap it out of my hand and just like put a plate of just Turkish food in my face. Oh, I miss your house.
Don't worry, you'll be around soon enough.
Buzz.
I should just go around anyway, even when you're not there.
Come around that, you should. Frazzle, I heard a buzz.
I don't know if we've already said this, but how are you today?
How are you is Nasselson. It was the word before.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I wouldn't
come
have been
on,
that
Fraser.
Yeah.
I forgot.
Come on,
I knew I should have taken notes.
Can you say it again?
Teşekkür ederim.
Is it two separate words or is it just one word?
They're two separate words, but they're a phrase that you always keep together. Teşekkür ederim. You'd hear them predominantly together.
Well, Deren is your niece. So now I'm confused.
Okay, not Deren. So teşekkür ederim.
Ederim. Okay.
Ederim. Teşekkür ederim.
Teşekkür ederim. Okay.
I feel like I've heard this multiple times.
We are family.
We are indeed. So this would be a response of gratitude.
Thank you, I'm so full.
Shorten it.
Thank you.
It means thank you.
Wow, teşekkür ederim.
Right, listen, when I say that as a child, I hated that word because I was like, teşekkür ederim was like what because was. When I first learned the word because, I was like, why does the word need to be so, because was the hardest word to spell. And when I heard teşekkür ederim, I was like, that's thank you? It's so long. There's so many syllables.
Is there like an abbreviation, like a thanks type thing?
There is thanks, but it's teşekkürler.
Teşekkürler. Yes, still long.
It's a bit.
What is like the direct translation? Is it literally just thank you?
So teşekkür is thanks. Ederim is I am doing. So the closest translation is I thank you.
Huh. Oh, okay.
Or I am thanking you. So it's like partly a sentence in almost a way, but it's a phrase, obviously.
Okay.
Right. Fact number 8. I've mentioned this before in one of the other potties. Chaz, you will appreciate this.
It's cheese. It's cheese.
Fact number 8. No, it's actually not cheese. So he's going to appreciate this on a different level. Oldest remains. In 2004, archaeologists excavating the Neolithic village of... Okay. Let's get my pronunciation. Shilorokambos. It sounds a different culture's words. I don't know. So a village.
Sounds Greek.
It sounds Greek, but I think my mum and dad mentioned that was something else. I can't remember. Mm. This is a Neolithic village in Cyprus. And these archaeologists made a remarkable discovery. The remains of a cat buried alongside a human. Radiocarbon dating of the cat's bones revealed that it lived approximately 9,500 years ago, making it the oldest known cat remains in the world. This finding challenges previous theories about the timeline of cat domestication, suggesting that cats were domesticated by humans much earlier than previously thought. The presence of a buried cat alongside a human suggests that cats held cultural significance to the ancient inhabitants of Cyprus, probably indicating a mutually beneficial relationship between humans and cats that developed due to the presence of rodents and agricultural settlements, as it usually is. This discovery provides valuable insights into the early history of human-cat interaction and sheds light on the process of cat domestication.
It's
okay. 9,500 years ago, almost 10,000 years ago.
And when were the Egyptians?
So this is 9.5 centuries ago. So
7,000 BC.
So that's what I was thinking as well. Charlie's mentioned the Egyptians.
Egyptian. Obviously, they're very close anyway. Like, as you said, like it's basically just across the pond.
That's great.
So maybe that kind of cat culture might have come from Egypt and like gone over, or vice versa. Maybe we're about to find out that Cyprus actually was the cat lovers and they brought it to Egypt. That would be mad.
Millennium BC.
Yeah.
God damn.
What century BC?
Fourth.
So 8th to the 6th. This is as far as, but there was further back, but this is as far as back as I took. It was Assyrian, Egyptian, and Persian rule. So if we go further than that as well, obviously the Egyptian influence was there. And then it moved to 300. Yeah, so Egypt was heavily involved, and it moved on to the Romans and became more what I said up to date.
Crazy.
Do you know what? I think they got it all wrong.
Oh, go for it.
I think that cats actually ruled Cyprus back then. And that was actually a cat being buried with its human.
Oh, my God. Cats, I think you could be right.
You know what? Yeah.
We end my Charlemagne history right there.
You just combined, like, Fraser combined, like, Love, Death, and Robots with Rick and Morty. That just created a whole new television show.
When you say it was buried, was it found in a coffin or was it just in a hole? Because, I mean, the cat could have just been eaten. The body, and if it was like
it died
of something toxic, it kind of just died.
It doesn't say in what capacity, like if it was in a grave or something, but it seems that it was conjoined with whatever the location of the human was. Right. So either like in each other's arms or side by side, like it was that much they could tell that there was a connection. It's not just oh, we found a really old cat. It's like, oh no, this was an element of domestication.
Yeah. That's a good point though. Like, how were they preserved? Because I know, like, when like in Pompeii, when the volcano went off, there's still remains of those people, but they're like mummified, flash frozen in like ash. Is it like that kind of preserve they found this whole thing? Or was it
remains?
Yeah, it just says remains. It doesn't
probably
really...
ritualistic, I'm imagining, because there was a lot of ritualistic stuff where they'd bury, like, a lot of the time it was like men with their women and stuff like that in certain cultures. So it was like very ritualistic.
Yeah. Preservation wise, I don't know. It could have just corroded at a slow enough pace that radiocarbon dating was still like approachable to work. it might just been, I don't know, elements of its remains, but for whatever reason, it did some part of it preserved enough to be able to identify a human and a cat.
That's awesome.
And radiocarbon. Okay. The next word is Hade.
Fraser.
Frazzle.
Hurry. Or hurry up, speed up.
Do it quick. You know what, Fraser? I'm going to give that to you. Yes, it is.
Fraser's
on the board. So, Hade is a colloquial version of Heidi. Okay. So, it's similar to come on, as you would say. Come on. So, it's the contraction of come on, also used as hurry, sort of like vamos in Spanish.
Right.
Hade.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Yeah, come. Oh, come on. Go. Come on, hurry up. It's that sense of emotion.
Vamanos.
Right. Fact number 9 is, according to Greek mythology, Aphrodite, the goddess of love, beauty, and fertility, was born from the foam of the sea near the shores of Paphos in Cyprus. Oh, man, I've already done this one.
I was waiting for an extra bit, but no, that was it.
No, there was no extra bit.
She came from the ocean.
It's okay. We're getting towards the end of this anyway.
Came from the foam of the ocean.
Poseidon in the foam.
Well, it is a known that, again, part of this mythology is that Atlantis is heavily connected to Cyprus. Atlantis apparently resides below Cyprus or is part of Cyprus as a land as well. I've heard a lot of those connections as well.
That's awesome. I love Atlantis, the film.
Yes.
Yep.
The animated one.
There you go.
I was like, Aquaman? What are you talking about? Right. Next word is chai?
Tea?
Rikesh gets it.
Oh, that's not fair.
He didn't buzz in.
I'm sorry.
I think we should each get a point because he didn't buzz in.
Fuck off. Yeah, he didn't buzz, off. Yeah.
Fuck off. These point vultures. Point vultures over it.
Give him my points. I'm gonna give a disputation point to everyone because everyone's disputing this. An extra little point. It makes no difference. Rikesh, don't worry, it made no difference. Two is mine anyway. Right, so fact number 10. Another mythological story associated with Cyprus involves a tragic love affair between Aphrodite and Adonis. Adonis, a handsome youth, was said to have been killed by a boar while hunting in the forests of Cyprus. Aphrodite's grief over his death is a central theme in many ancient texts and artworks. Mm. So even in those mythological times when these stories were being written or really a bit more sort of spread out, yeah, Cyprus is very much a part of these stories, even in ways that I didn't expect.
Hmm. Mm. Have you spent much time in the forest of Cyprus?
Cyprus for me is one big forest. Cyprus is one big village. That's just the way I can describe it. And I don't mean that as a negative. I love it. That's what I go there for. And I am going to touch on a bit more onto that lifestyle, which is kind of the point in this pod. We still haven't really got to the heart of it, if you will.
Is it like Konoha?
Pardon?
Is it like Konoha? Naruto?
Hidden.
No. I actually have to stop and think. Yes, but not as hidden. Nowhere near as hidden. It's so hot that grass can't even grow there most of the year. When I first saw greenery in Cyprus, I was shocked. As a child. I never saw it. Right. Next word. Aman Allahum. There's a clue there.
Fraser.
Frazzle.
It's like, amen.
Oh, do you know what?
It is an exclamation of sorts, so you're on the right track, but it's not the right words. Go on, Chaz.
Buzz. Because you say it all the time. Come on, man.
You know what? Same emphasis. All right, I'll give you, I'll slow it down and give you a clue. Aman Allahum.
All right, Buzz.
Rikesh.
Oh, God, come on.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
It's oh, my God.
Oh, my God. It's oh, my God.
Charlie got it.
Fuck off, he didn't buzz. I want a point. He didn't buzz. I want a point. He didn't buzz.
All right, hold on.
He didn't buzz. I want a point.
Rikesh.
I was talking to Sirhan. You butted in, and then I gave the answer.
Right, Rikesh, I'll tell you what.
Charlie didn't buzz in.
I will not give him the point if you take away your point for chai, because you didn't buzz in for tea either.
Oh, I don't care about that. Fraser's the only winner in that situation.
I think that we all kind of knew. I think Rikesh didn't know at all, actually. So I think
I'm giving the point to Charlie. Giving the point to Charlie. No, sorry. I'm the point master. No, it's too late. It's oh my God. Aman is more of the oh my part. Allahum, whom means like it's a possessive. My God. Oh my God.
Okay.
Shut your dirty mouth.
Blasphemous.
Right. Fact number 11. The story of Pygmalion, yeah. And Galatea, a sculptor who fell in love with his own creation, is also connected to Cyprus. Pygmalion, unable to find a woman as perfect as his sculpture, prayed to Aphrodite, who brought the statue to life. The myth highlights the power of love and the transformative nature of art.
I don't think that's really right. He made a beautiful sculpture and he said, there's no woman as beautiful as my sculpture. So Aphrodite said, do you know what? Here, your sculpture's alive now. There's nothing to do with love in that.
No, so you're not just speaking
the first ever sex doll with the help of a god.
Oh my God.
That's where it came from, guys.
Legend.
That's where it came from.
Nice.
You dirty motherfucker.
Nice.
Nice.
Right. This one is the last word. And I'm going to give you some options because this is a word that you would not have heard before.
Buzz.
Okay.
It's going to be blind.
You want to give a guess, Chaz? You want to give me a random word? And if you get it, I'll give you.
I know what it is.
Go on.
Butthole. Am I right?
You're right! Oh my God! Yes, how did it. You know?
He won, guys. You know? He won.
Get in.
Get out. What's going to do, Charlie? What's going to do? Get the fuck out. Right. Does anyone know? I won't give any options first. What does anyone know what the word use means? Y-U-Z.
Use.
And in my particular language, this is a U with two dots on it. It's just a different sound, but it's a Y-U-Z.
Nope.
If you don't know it, I've got options.
You have a thing on your fridge that has that on, and it has a picture of someone on it. Right?
I don't know.
Sorry. Yeah,
I won't
sorry.
Know. It's okay. No,
mind palacing.
I like it. Right. Does it mean face? Does it mean 100? Does it mean swim? Or does it mean scrape? Charlie's twitching. Are you right?
Buzz.
Chazza.
100.
Charlie's going for 100. I ain't going to give any results after.
I think that means I'm wrong.
Rikesh, you want to give a go?
What were the options one more time?
Face, 100, swim, or scrape?
Face, 100, swim. What did Charlie say? He said 100.
Don't tell him.
He said nothing.
He said nothing. Hey, you snitch.
I'll go with face.
Rikesh is going for face. Frazzle, you want to give your go?
I will go for swim.
I did say I saw that pitch. There was a picture of someone's face. It's going to be face. Why would you have a picture of someone's face with the word face above it?
It's like me having a picture.
Just so you know.
Charlie. Face. It's just face. Man. Boy. Is that everyone's final answer? No one wants to give any other answers?
I don't like it when you do this because it probably means we're all wrong.
What was the last one that was left?
Scrape. Everyone's final answer?
All right. Yeah.
What if I told you all?
We're all wrong.
You are all correct. This word means all four things, depending on how you use it. So use, if you go to a Turk and said use, it's the face.
Okay.
It's also interchangeable, like we might call an object, it's on the face of the wall, on the face of your
surface.
Phone. The surface is interchangeable, but it means face. Use also means 100. Use, depending on how you use it, also means to swim. Use dum, use your room. I have swum, I am swimming.
How do you use?
How so if you would say 100 faces scraped while swimming.
Right, this is what I'm going to come to. This is what I'm going to come to. So if you were to say... So... Okay, all right.
That news report.
All right.
He doesn't even know. You've broken.
No, I'm trying to figure out. Hold on. Use done. Yüzler, yüzerek, yüzdü.
That's the sentence.
100 faces scraping as they were scraped, swam.
Okay.
It sounds painful as shit.
It does. I couldn't figure out any other way. It's one of those words when I first discovered, I know there's other words, even in English has got some similar vibes. I was like, oh my God, this word's got so many meanings. Oh my fucking God. Right.
What's that for us? Like two. I guess two is a good one. Two.
Yes, but this particular word is all spelt the same in every instance. It's just the last.
Oh.
It's the Y-U-Z is exactly the same. It's just what you add on to it adds perspective.
They're so different as well.
Yeah.
Like, they're such different things. Face, swimming, spring.
I know.
So bizarre that they were like, yeah, we'll just use that word. That other thing.
They're just sitting there. What about this word? We just used it. This is the third time now. Don't worry, man. Don't nothing back in.
Who the hell? No one can read at this
stage. Who's ever gonna say? Who's gonna ever say 100 faces scraping swam? No one's gonna fucking say that in a sentence. Put it together, man.
Welcome to Red Jack's on. 9,000 years later.
Right. The last little fact. Cyprus is sometimes mentioned in connection with the Trojan War in Greek mythology. According to some accounts, after the fall of Troy, some Trojan allies settled in Cyprus, including Teysa, the son of King Telamon of Salamis. And Salamis is a place in Cyprus.
Oh, that's cool.
So, before we go to an ad break, I've got one last little enjoying thing to do. I'm going to do this for you guys because I think you guys have danced for me enough today, right? Charlie, can you tell it for everyone, if you feel comfortable, what is your full name?
Charles George William Eastwick.
Okay, Charles. I thought it was Charlie. Okay, of course it's Charles. I'm going to read your name, pronouncing it with a Turkish pronunciation.
Go for it.
Okay. Jaharles.
Jaharles.
Instantly.
George.
George.
William. East Wijke.
Wijke.
Wijke. East Wijke.
C is a J in Turkish. J, it's called a J sound. Yeah. A J.
Mm.
So it'd be like a Wijk. Every K sound in Turkish is okay.
Which is kind of like, that's almost like Polish.
That's why sometimes when I'm going to write like a story in English, I will use Turkish pronunciations because it just immediately sounds foreign. I just take an English word or whatever word that I know, put a Turkish pronunciation on it, type it out like that, and it becomes a mythical name, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Fraser, could you give me your full name?
Fraser Guy Asher Roberts.
All right, Guy spelt G U I.
Yes.
Asher A S H E R.
Yes.
So, Fraser Guy Asher Roberts. I didn't know about the Guy Asher part. So, Fraser, your Turkish name is Fraser Guy Asher. No, Asher.
Asher. Fraser's got Asher in his name.
Roberts.
Nah, no, it's her, Roberts.
You've ruined it, Charlie. You've taken the decorum down. These were meant to be like our fantasy.
It's like a primary D&D school name. Thing. Hey, you got arse hair in your name.
I think that should be his RPG name.
I'm gonna go to Turkey or Cyprus and gonna hand over my passport and the passport.
Okay, like,
pass it back.
He's going to call people like, come check this up. Come check this up. No, he's safe. He's just got to see this guy's name. Right, Rikesh, what is your full name?
Rikesh Kumar Thakur.
Kumar is K-U-M-A-R.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your name in Turkish, my friend, is Rikesh Kumar Thakur.
It's pretty close.
Mm.
It's pretty cool.
Hakore. It's Turkish is purely phonetic. However you see it, it's exactly how you read. That's why there's so many words, there's so many letters, because there's no sounds insinuating. It's all spelt out. Everything.
Makes sense, yeah.
And my name is Serhan Ahmet Avcı.
Avcı
means hunting or a hunter. Because my granddad was a hunter. That's why we were named Avcı.
That's sick.
It's pretty cool.
That's cool.
When the British came and they introduced birth certificates, they went, you need a surname. They introduced surnames to my culture in Cyprus because we were known as like, oh, you're Charlie, son of, as it was in England, brother of so-and-so, or Charlie the blacksmith. So like people in this country called so-and-so carpenter, so-and-so tailor. It's exactly the same in my culture. Your job became
crazy.
So my mum's side is Balut.
Your Serhan Ahmet, what, like Hunter?
Hunter, yeah. My surname
sick.
Is
sick.
My mum's name is Balı to mean honeys because they were beekeepers.
Aww.
That's really cute.
And with that cuteness and silliness, we go to an ad break. Ebre!
Woo!
Ebre, yeah.
I'd say ad break in Turkish.
Reklam. Reklam means advert.
Reklamlar.
The advert.
Reklam, hadi.
Hadi, reklam, hadi. Vamos.
What's up, gamers? Fraser here, aka Virtuous VR, announcing that I've just launched my own Twitch channel dedicated to playing some of my favourite games from a variety of genres, as well as emerging games and DLC that I find interesting. If you want to come and hang out with me, and sometimes my friends as well, while we chill with some games, come and find me over on twitch.tv/virtuous_VR. I try to stream most evenings from 7pm onwards, that's UK time. I'm not always super consistent, but if you hit the follow button, you'll receive a notification when I go live, and you can hop in whenever you want. Make some noise in the chat so that I know that you're there, and feedback is always welcome as well. But that's it from me, back to this week's episode of Red Jackson. Later, gamers.
And we're back. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the second part of this man's ramblings of childhood and history and and Duolingo with the boys.
And Cyprus.
And Cyprus. So, this last segment is called The Treasury of Turks' Memories. Because I like to ram. So, I first went to Cyprus in 1994. I was 2.5 years old, and obviously it was the first time me going to the sea. The first time I go to Cyprus, the electricity still to this day cuts in Cyprus, the power cuts. When there's a power cut, it's hot, there's no fans, there's no TV, there's nothing. Especially in my village is known as to be the closest to the main airport. So we would go to the airport and chill, because the airport had electricity, so we'd go have ice cream, play games.
Oh, really?
Mad.
Yeah, the airport, and you could really watch the planes like take off. You could get as close as you wanted, literally. Well, not on the fucking runway, but
on the wing,
run alongside it.
As I'm chasing the fucking border, so I go to this place. So you know how, like, in certain bars, certain places with little casino machines, you've got the little high stalls, okay, mm-hmm. Very narrow stalls, and on the back of the stall there will be like a cushion support, like usually screwed onto like a metal rail.
Okay.
I've ran 2.5 years old to one of these little gaming places. I've stepped on the stool, standing up, you know, barely walking. I'm tapping all the buttons and shit. Now, the cushion behind me apparently was broken. We didn't really could tell. It wasn't being fixed. So the metal bar that was the head, the backrest was broken, and it was a spike. I'm rocking left to right. I slip and I fall on this spike, and it goes into the back of my skull. I still have the scar to this day. Now, this is a very traumatic story, but this is something I don't remember, obviously, but this is something that's been told for years. And it's very traumatic. We didn't know if I was going to live. My sister found me. There was a lot of blood, a lot of trauma and stuff. I had to go to the hospital. This is my first time going to Cyprus. Every fucking holiday, I break myself. If it helps, I did live.
Oh, thank God.
Everyone held their breath.
Jesus Christ. That's insane. Your sister found you.
My sister found me. They must have heard me scream.
Shit. Mate, yep. That's scary.
Back this chair again. Wait.
So imagine a high stool. Imagine a high stool. Metal. And imagine on the back there's like a metal bar with a cushion screwed onto the front. Imagine the cushion's kind of fallen off and this metal bar where the connection is snapped off. So you're sitting here and there's two metal bars that are kind of like here. And there's a cushion here. As obviously my height being 2.5 years old, the cushion's fallen off, there's the spike, and as I've slipped, it's gone into the back of my head.
Damn.
That's horrific.
Yeah. More for the people involved.
It explains so much.
It does.
Excuse me, what are you saying? Right. This was also the year that there is a very famous mountain in Cyprus called, we call it Besh Parmak Dağ, Five Finger Mountain, because it's literally...
Sorry. Say that all again.
Besh Parmak Dağ.
Oh, that sounded a lot short the second time around. Okay.
Yeah, sorry, I speak too fast for that. It means basically like five finger mountain because it's got five like little bumps and ridges that looks like a hand a little bit.
Oh, that's awesome.
Being a hot country, there's a lot of wildfires, meaning fires started off from the sun because it just gets that heat and that hot, sorry, and that dry. I remember having a childhood memory. My mum kind of placed it of driving through the mountains, not me driving, obviously. And we would go like do barbecues in the mountains and seeing ashen trees, just seeing a whole forest around the road, just pure, like dead from the fire, all ash and shit. I still have that memory at like 2.5, 3 years old.
Nice.
It was just such a weird feeling.
That's
to drive.
Crazy. Yeah.
But even at that age, it wasn't like, oh, there's been a fire or danger. I didn't have that. It was like, I could feel that things are dead around. There's death. There's a quietness. There's no animals. There's nothing. Zero sound. Mm. And just ash trees. It's a very weird look, feeling at the time.
Mm, I bet.
Obviously stuck with
it. Is this still the first time you were in Cyprus? Like, yeah, this is the head cave.
Yeah, this is still 94. This might have been before or after that time. I don't know how long we went for. Could I probably been a good 3-4 weeks that we went, most likely.
You probably forgot because
I don't remember most of my childhood.
That memory is left on the back of the chair.
Oh, absolutely.
I can't get over it, mate. That's fucking, that thing is gonna stick with me forever. I'm gonna dream of that tonight and have nightmares.
Every time you see a high stall, like the Namco arcade, no! Like, no!
It just explains why your mum's so protective, mate. Like, I would not let you out of my fucking sight,
mate,
again.
I almost
even died, as an adult.
The threat of death hit me up until that point like 3 times. Because one, when I was born, there was complications and I kept passing out as a baby. Like, there was not enough oxygen in my body, so they got really worried. Second time, I was sleeping in my grandparents' house in Haringey in a crib. My mum walked by me and she just had the urge to grab me. She grabbed me and moved away, and then fucking drywall from the ceiling dropped on my basket. Yeah. Something's been trying to kill me for a while.
Holy shit. You've like final destination your life.
Yeah, I was going to say, don't say final destination. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I'm going to jump ahead to something a bit more lighthearted, something that you guys know now. I'm jumping over a few of these because I don't want to give it too much time. 96 now, so we move on 2 years later. This is when I learned to ride a bicycle. This is when I really learned to ride a bicycle.
That's my favorite memory.
This is a lot of yeah.
It's already going to be calamity.
This is a no. This is actually good memories of learning to ride with my dad. My cousin gave me his old bicycle, and we'd ride from one end of the village to the other every morning. It'd always be a nice bonding experience, and we would drive further up to the village into the trees, and we'd like insignia'd our name a little bit, left our initials if you were on a tree. Done the classic thing.
Cute.
Okay, Charlie, you want it. I'm getting there. So, I've learned to ride a bicycle, yeah? Two things have happened to me. I've got the need for fucking speed at this point. Now, all the houses in Cyprus are detached, entirely detached. There's no attached or semi-attached because it's so hot that you need the space. So I am riding this bike as fast as, like a trap now, gaining speed. I've got no concept that I'm going to fall or hurt myself. Fuck it, go faster and faster. I don't know how to necessarily, like, kind of the rules of bike riding. The back brakes weren't really working, only the front brakes were working. So at that top speed, I just stopped at the front of the house for whatever reason to say something to someone and just went, boom, and just flipped over. I mean, perfectly in sync with my body. So imagine a bicycle riding, imagine it upside down, my head's hit the floor, my legs are kind of like still pedaling, I've smacked my head. And then just, boom, just like dropped on my side. I was in shock. I was paralyzed. I didn't cry. I just learned the lesson of you don't use the fucking front brakes.
Jesus fucking Christ.
A couple of days around this, I'm riding in the street. The street is right outside my grandparents' house. I'll never forget it. I'm riding down the road, quite slow. I'm not that speeding. There's a car coming at me. Now, this is Cyprus on top of that. They're not so British enough to stop or go around you. There's not even a pavement. It's just the road. And then there's just all rocks and dirt on your left and right. It was a Reliant fucking Robin. It was a three-wheel motherfucker just going, beep, 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 beep. I've frozen. I'm like, oh my God, this car is still coming at me. Oh my God. Then I just somehow turned the wheel to the right. I've gone off the road. I'm still in shock. This car's fucking gone past me. Like, beep, 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 beep. I've just ridden, bumped into like a rock. No foot placed on the floor, nothing. I'm just like, oh my God, that car almost hit me. And then again, just boom, dropped on my side. Not just dropped, I dropped in a fucking bush of like dry, like nettles and like what's it on the rose, the little spikes.
Thorns.
Thorns, right? So I dropped in, and this is summer, so it's dry. They're more prickly, all in these thorns, bruv. all of a sudden this all hit me. I'm crying. I'll never forget being in the bath. I'm a little boy. I'm like, what, 5 years old. Blood is dripping off of me in little spots. My whole family around me with all tweezers and fucking disinfectant. I'm screaming. I'm crying. And everyone was like, you fucking did this. I'm like, but the car was gonna hit me.
Oh, no.
I mentioned this to my mum and she still disputed. She was like, yeah, but why would the car hit you? I'm like, I was a child. I thought the car was gonna end my life. Mm. I went into fucking shock.
Shock.
He fibs at a 5 year old as well. That's mean.
No, but do you know what? The way I remember it was with that shock, but it might have been a genuine, more of a little polite little like, bib, bib. All right, mate, like move out the way. It could have been so polite, but in that moment, my 5-6 year old brain is like, I'm gonna die. This is it. I lived a good life.
Cars would have looked massive to you. Yeah. As well.
Right. So yeah, that was the nettle one. I also broke my thumb. Not in this year. I think it was 98. I fell on my thumb whilst playing with some kids outside, like cousins and family and whatnot. I fell on it, but not broken in such a way that it like went out of place, but it just went red and swelled up. The last week of holiday, I was like, I don't really want to go to hospital in this country. I'd much rather go in the UK. I'm registered with my GP. So for a week, I could barely do anything. I couldn't hold a fork. I couldn't wipe my fucking self without having to try and learn with my left hand, trying to pull clothes on and off. So I'm in bad pain. Come to the UK, went for a scan, and the GP was like, right, got the results. He was like, you are lucky. And I was like, okay, why? He was like, you didn't just bruise it. You broke your thumb. You broke the bone in your thumb, one particular bone. And he goes, you're lucky because it just happened to grow right back into place. Otherwise, you would have been disjointed.
Oh shit.
So it broke. It really did break. I just had no fucking clue.
Soldiered on, mate.
Oh, I did. Another couple little memories of this time is, so my family were obviously shepherds and farmers. That's where a lot of my family comes from. My great
and hunters.
And hunters. I mean, hunting is legal in Cyprus. You can still hunt. But with certain people. Times. Not people. That's murder, Charlie. That's murder. That shouldn't be legal anywhere. But no. So I was around a lot of animals, you know, a lot of goats, sheep, lambs, cows, chickens, pigeons.
Animals, yeah.
Animals, a lot of farm animals and all that shit. But obviously I was there to see its a lot of birth as well. So I saw a little lamb being born. Yeah? Oh. I saw this thing come into the world. Got up, started running around. So one of my great uncles was like, right, you're here with me. You name him. What do you want to name him? I was like I said, like 5 years old. I couldn't think of anything. I was like, Sedhan, name him me. My uncle's like, all right, I'll name him Sedhan. I was like, cool. I come back years later. This uncle's still a shepherd at the time. And he's like, you know your fucking goat. And I'm like, yeah. Right. And I was like, yeah. And he goes, he was also quite a rare one. He's a blondie. The little front patch wasn't brown or black. It was blonde. He goes, he's now become the main man. The main male of the fucking of his little family. So he's the dominant male. He's got massive fucking horns. And he goes, because I'm another male and I'm the shepherd, he keeps fucking coming for me. And I was like, no. It's like, he keeps fucking coming because he sees me as a threat to the females and the leadership and all that shit. So as a shepherd, you've got they've got big sticks that they will carry with them, right? Almost like bamboo style. My uncle would always know which tree, how to shave it down and thing it. But they're like staffs, bruv, some of them. So when this goat would what's it called? When you go against someone, like challenge him, he's lined himself up fucking like bull style and just runs at him. My uncle would have to stand off of him and be like, I need to show dominance because this is the way you work. And just like a normal goat would, he would wait and get the top end of the stick and just bang and have to smack it across the head to drop it to the floor. Like two rams going for each other to give that same impact and response. Then the male, my guy would be like, all right, cool, yeah, you've won today. And then he would just leave him alone for a little bit.
Wow.
Yeah.
You win.
What a little shit.
Mate, honestly, but seeing stuff like that coming from the UK was just so nice. It was just such a different, like feeling at home, but also like alien. It was such a weird feeling.
Mm.
2000, me and my parents and my family have walked up as a cathedral castle called St. Hilarion on the side of a mountain, which is 950 meters above the sea. These are old school stone steps with no handrail, no bar, nothing. You just walk up these steps, bro. There's still
and they let you walk up that.
Yeah. It's a touristic thing. That's what I'm saying. That safety Europeanism mentality is not in sight.
No, I mean it's like your parents let you walk up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they let you, huh? I think by this point I was 9 years old. I was old enough to carry my own head. But
debatable.
Debatable. Bro, I still remember coming down. That was the first time ever I knew what tide was, because I came down and standing on the spot, my legs were twitching and shaking because I pushed the muscle that far to go all the way up and then come all the way down. That's 950 meters one way, man.
That's long. Oh,
it's 1,900 meters. How many
for steps? A kid?
Oh, in that man. Heat. And four of us, there's still the video camera, old school video, like VHS, of us going like, oh my God. This was the year, and Charlie, this is why I connected to you in Portugal. This is why I understood your pain. This was the year I actually, for the first time, and thank God, the only time I got heat stroke.
Oof.
This shit broke me, bro. Broke me. I was cold and hot at the same time. I'm sweating. There was a sense of hallucination, like you're almost about to trip over and you're still in the room. Horrible. It lasted me for a day. I just remember lying on the cold marble floors of Cyprus, my little sitting outside, coffee. I'm just lying on the floor like, bundled, and everyone's checking on me, and I'm just sweating and hot. I knew you. I was 9 years old, and I will never forget that pain and that discomfort. So I felt your pain on holiday.
Oh, sorry you went through that as a kid.
I had to learn my lesson. I had to learn my lesson. So another little jump. So still in 2000, we would go to the Five Finger Mountain for kebab. Okay, there's a very particular spot that would go for barbecue. And there's a path that me and a lot of my cousins would always follow. Again, I don't know how our parents allowed us this. So there's a really steep bit with these little tiny little castle ruins. You go up this very steep hill. And then there's a couple of like little like slopes. So you have like a little flat bit of land. Very Zelda-ish. There's a lot of like big rocks that you've got to kind of climb over. And it's just always steep. You're always kind of going upwards. Mm-hmm. Then there's a point where there's like almost like a very small chasm, like all these little jutting rocks, a bit pointy, very dark and shadowy on your left. And it's like there's like a stonish sort of like nature-made bridge that you're just about scampering. And this becomes so steep that I remember there's two stones on your left and right as you're climbing. You've got to wrap your arm around one to pull yourself to the next step. So it's really steep at this point. You pull whoever's coming with you up as well. So you're kind of semi-mountain climbing in the lightest sense possible. You're watching out to not be stung. You're watching out not to be cut, not to slip. You're watching out for snakes, all of that jazz.
Why are you doing all this?
So this is what I'm going to come to. You get up to this point and you get to a flat surface and you get to a small alcove, an edge of the whole mountain. You are so high up. I was so high up. I've been there so many times, but at one point I was so high up that the clouds lowered down low enough and it came through me. I reached and you could put your hand through the clouds. Cool. That's how... Because it's the tip of the mountain. It's attracting those clouds. It rains a lot there. It's colder there. But you get this beautiful view and it's just pure forest. Like you see the island from such afar that you can see what you would see on a map. The edge of the line of the drawn of the island. It's a very weird moment to see a shape to the land. Like it's a mountain.
There's a lot of space at the top.
Not a lot. Like it's, let's say, you know, the dimension of my shed, the length of it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it's about that much.
Oh.
So one end would be where you'd go back down the mountain. The other side is that you'd fall off the edge. Like I've peed off the edge. I was like, yeah, man, I need to throw a stone, see if you hear it, and you fucking don't. If we fell, we would have died. It was that. I don't know how our parents allowed it. I don't think they really knew, but we'd done it for years with the cousins. Always the youngest would go and make this trek for us.
Mad.
And just for the view?
Just for the view. And it's sort of the traditional.
I thought you were going to say there was a freaking kebab shop at the top, like restaurant. No! That was
why
just
would
sick.
We go to the mountain, right? To
because if it's
kebab.
Like the best food or something, like, yeah, because when we went to Switzerland on top of whatever the fuck that Hardekolm, I think it was called, there was a massive restaurant up there. It was just awesome. We didn't eat there, but it looked really nice.
I don't know what to tell you, mate. There is loads
just
of
a little bit of land that you can sit and or stand and look at the view.
Yeah. Mate, honestly, you can't describe it. It was the most therapeutic, meditative place I can think of. Like, it's the closest I could say that I feel like I was, like, one with nature. Because I worked hard to get there. Like, I knew a path that no one else knew, like a select group of cousins, felt nice. Mm-hmm. Also dangerous, but nice. Right. We're getting more to the present day now. So 1 year, 2003, I go to my cousin's wedding. And the wedding's obviously hosted outside. It's summer, it's hot. So it's an outside venue. You can kind of see this open land around you. There's a particular wedding venue that they have it next to a fun fair. So some of me and my cousins were like, we're kind of bored now. We've eaten, we've danced, we've had our fun. Let's go to the fucking fun fair. So we leave the wedding, cross this little bit of land, get to a fun fair, but the fun fair is closed. There's no one operating it. Don't ask me who or how. I think it was probably just left on. The bumper cars were still working. So we got on the bumper car. And this is, again, this is another little Cyprus thing. I sat in the bumper car. What's the first thing you would do sitting in a bumper car?
Bump someone.
Okay, before that point, you've just sat in the car.
Seatbelt.
You might think of a seatbelt. So I sat in there. I'm 12, 13 years old. I'm like, where's the strap? Now, my cousins from Cyprus are like, what strap? And I'm like, oh. You got, and they're like, I was like, how do you stop your head from backing? They're like, you got to put your foot up on the dash. So as you're driving, you've got one foot up. So if you smack, you've got this to hold your head.
From. Wow. Jesus.
But this is the type
simple
of...
Well, ingenuity.
This is what you I'm saying,
snap
man.
Snap like, your knee.
Common sense. They had like their own little... But we just fucking bumper card for the whole wedding night. It was the best wedding ever because I wasn't
that
there.
Sounds epic,
that
sounds epic, actually.
Yeah.
Bro, in what world could you go to a closed down fun fair and be like, let's just switch on one of the machines and let's just do us.
That's so sick. Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, it was so good. I had my first clubbing experience in Cyprus at this age. So,
like rave?
Not like rave clubbing. What? No. Like music, like a disco, Charlie. You know, the disco.
Me and the cousins went out, clubbed some seals.
Wow.
That's another, another clubbing.
Make some slippers.
Yeah.
See that the clubbing of the steels was Charles, the making of the slippers was Jihadless. It was like, hey, slippers, keep your finger warm. Yeah, first clubbing experience. It was a hotel club. It was a performance by an artist, and then after the performance was done, the little concert, it became a club. So I was like, oh, I don't have to get ID'd, I could be here. It was my first ever club, me, my sister and my aunt. It was a foam party as well.
Sick.
It was nuts. I drove a tractor for the first time that year. I very almost slightly tipped over the tractor because I didn't really.
I just imagine the same as a bicycle.
No,
hits the curb in it.
No, it, you know what?
So handling any kind of transport is just a bad sign.
Ends up on its side.
Until I learned to drive, I was a mess with any transport, I'll be honest with you. Any wheels. But one of my great uncles allowed me. I've got a few great uncles. And he was like, yeah, drive it. Me, my great uncle, my cousin. Now, I'm driving on a dirt road. There's an anthill. Thinking it's an anthill. It's just a bit of dirt. I didn't realize it was so reinforced. So when the big wall went over it, rather than like poof and flat, it just went boom. It just jumped for a moment over it. And I was like, my uncle's like, no. Like, you do not. It's. I remember because the accelerator is so, like, even compared to it, so sensitive. A little touch was like, boom. It's like you've got turbo because it's just pure power of track. It's pulling crazy power. It was a nice experience, though. Same year, I used to walk with another uncle through the forest of Cyprus a lot. Have my experience of kind of going through the Turkish outback, if you will. My first experience of having wild dogs around us, because my uncle had his own dog, and there'll be a pack of wild dogs around you. And one thing that I found interesting was, forget having like a stick in your hand that I did. All right, cool. It was like, grab a rock in your hand, just in case. I was like, it goes, but put it behind your back. And it was the fact that the sentiment of these wild dogs have interacted and fought with humans for so long here that they would understand a rock in your hand, you had to put it behind your back, even with the element of surprise.
Mm-hmm.
So what, they would know that you've got it behind your back? No.
No, they would. So if I had a rock in my hand, and if they see it, they see it as a sign of violence or attack, so they would attack you more. Whereas if because we had a dog, we didn't know the interaction, but as humans, like, we're advised, like, my dad went through this walking through Cyprus at night at one point, and he goes, he went from A to B, and he goes, a pack of wild dogs found him, but because he was on their territory. So my dad knew, very rationally and calmly, given his duties, he goes, if I run, they're going to catch me. If I attack, they're going to kill me. So my dad just went, right, no eye contact, don't make any sudden movement, and just keep walking, and just don't run, just walk. And he just walked for about a good half a mile to a mile with these dogs just yapping, 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 barking. And then they kind of realized you're not a threat, and then they left him. So if my dad had something in his hand, they would have understood it's more of a threat. So it's the way you react, just in case.
Yeah, fuck, you know. Yeah, I remember your dad telling me that story. Mad.
Yes. One of the nicest memories I have in Cyprus is in my grandparents' house. We had a few years we would all go and our holidays would cross over, but there was one year where my whole immediate family was in the same house, which was very nice. So me, I was sleeping in an open up bed in a bedroom where my mum and my sister were sleeping. This was for the wedding in the guest room. My auntie and her ex-husband slept in a blow-up bed in the living room. Gizan and Izel, my two cousins, their daughters, slept in my grandparents' bed. And my grandparents slept on the veranda in the back garden outside.
What?
Yeah. The culture of Cyprus especially, they're used to like sleeping on very flat land. Like they would sleep on the roof for air. Because there's no aircon, there's no electricity, there's no fans. You would sleep outside. And you wouldn't subconsciously, even my parents, they're like, oh my God, we'd say it's so dangerous. We're like, yeah, but you never rolled off the roof. You always stayed in the middle. Because
what about bugs and stuff, though? That's what I'd be worried about.
What I noticed from the older generation is when a bug would come towards my face, I'm spazzing out around it, slapping it away. My nan, the fly would land, she wouldn't even twitch, and then it would just fly off. It would leave her alone.
Oh, wow. Like,
they were very... Biting-wise, if mosquitoes kind of know, they would like, oh, it would take the piss a little bit, like, you've got sweet blood. But like when you first... A lot of people, when they first move to Cyprus, they will eat you alive. Because whatever reason, your pheromones or toxin or blood is different to them because you're coming out. The people that have been bitten there, after a year or two, they're like, I don't get bitten as much.
Okay.
It just seems to, I don't know what you may produce in your body, but you don't seem to attract it as much.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, for whatever reason. So for them, it wasn't as intense. But yeah, it's a really nice, family memory. Everyone under one roof. It was, and most houses in Cyprus are bungalows. You don't have an upstairs because heat rises. Everything's made on one floor. And old Ottoman architecture was very much courtyards. You lived within a courtyard, and then you had all your buildings, outhouses within the courtyard. So it's that same mentality.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Last couple of things now. I drove a car for the first time in 2005, which would have made me about 14, 15. I'm in one of, so my cousin's married this man who's became my uncle, very nice man, and he owns a bit of land. He's like a agricultural farmer, really growing, anyway, loads of things, vegetables, fruits. And he was like, come with me one day, help me kind of, I don't know what to call it, garden, tame the land a little bit, cut down certain things, replant certain things. So I'm helping him farm. It's a heavy work, but I helped him. So on the way back, he's got this like little van almost, and he's like, do you want to drive? And I'm like, I've never driven. It's like, don't worry about it. Especially in Cyprus, they're more... I've seen my little cousin drive with a book under his foot. Like his dad allows him to park the car, for example. That's how he learned to drive, or driving in the village. Especially at that stage, the policing was a lot less. So I'm in this sort of wilderness outback farmland. It's all empty roads. I was like, yeah, fuck it, go. Don't know how I did it, but I drove quite naturally. It came quite easy to me. Like I even had one arm out, music was on, I was chill. I was like, I can do this. And even was like, well fucking done. You're doing really well.
Cool. Until?
Until?
Anthill.
No, not the anthill. So a car appears in front of me.
Oh, something did happen. Shit. Okay.
A car appears in front of me, but not like speeding or anything. It's just trying to come my way. But it's a one-lane road. I'm like, what the fuck do I do? So my uncle was like, well, reverse. And I was like, okay. So I'm trying to reverse. I don't know how to fucking do this. But reversing as well, even reversing now, I've got to be a little bit extra careful than going forwards. First day fucking driving. So I've reversed, but I don't realize that on the side of each road, there's a little dip. So as I've reversed it and got kind of just like swivel to the back, to the left, I've dropped a little bit into the ditch. Like, onto one fucking side. Not too dramatically, but I'll never forget. I was like, oh my God. Michael's like, don't worry, it's fine. If I was like, I shit myself, bro. That's why I fucked up his car. The other car went by me like, thanks. Just kept going. And then he got the car out.
Jesus.
And yeah, I will say they're the biggest memories that I can give you. Right, there's a couple of little more here and there, but yeah.
Nice, man. You still got uncles there, yeah?
I've still got uncles and aunties there. Yeah, I've got a big amount of family in equally in Cyprus and equally in London, or in the UK in general.
Nice. No, that's really fun and interesting.
Yeah. Crazy. I just wanted a little diary entry of just some of the memories and stuff. Thank you guys for coming on this purely self-indulgent journey. This will be my thing. I always just think of Charlie. It's like, just imagine, man, in like 10, 20 years, you'll listen back to this and be like, I'm so glad I did it. I'm like, this is why I'm doing it.
Good.
There is a lot more time.
Now you've got to take us to Cyprus.
Yeah. After Fraser takes us to Japan.
Yeah. That. Yeah, Fraser.
We saw the side eye, Fraser. No side eye. He's taking us to Japan.
He just turns off the blur of his background. He's just already in Japan, like, guys, I live there now.
Well, Rick has got to take us to Butlins.
To Butlins?
That's a big one.
Easy. Easy. Rick has been screaming Butlins since fucking sixth form. Let's go.
I'll take you guys to my homeland.
Right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. I have been your host for the Turks, tremendous Turkish time tales. And with me always has is and has been
your listener and lover, Charlie.
I knew it.
Your brown guy, Rick.
Wow, that was just lazy. That wasn't even offensive. That was just lazy.
That was pure lazy. Pure lazy. No food in my system right now.
Okay. Fraser?
Your learned student.
Damn! Thank you for listening, everyone! Have a good day, good night, and Gule-gule!
Gule-gule! What does that mean?
It means fuck you, Fraser!
It's get out of here!
Get your ass out of here!
Get off of my podcast!
Get out of here!
Get out of my podcast!